Issues, etc. returned to the air on June 30th after being canceled by the previous leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod during Holy Week of 2008 for a special 10-year anniversary donation of $100 or more. We'll send you a CD of Issues, etc. listeners' top 12 hymns. You can make an anniversary gift online at issuesetc.org or by check. Make your check payable to Issues, etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Welcome back to Issues, etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. I think it was... It was my English teacher from high school who gave the advice. I don't know why he was giving this advice to high school English students, but he gave it nonetheless. The advice he gave was, and this is, got to remember, this is back in the mid-70s when I was going to high school. The advice was, if anyone from 60 Minutes ever calls you, don't take the call. Don't answer the phone. If they ask you for an interview, politely decline. Now, this was during that era of kind of gotcha journalism where if 60 Minutes called, you were probably in trouble. And if they called, you were probably, and you said yes to an interview, they were probably going to pin you to the wall. They had something on you and they were going to make sure that it made it onto Sunday night television. Probably good advice, maybe wasted on high school English students, but good advice nonetheless. A lot of religious leaders have followed that advice. They've followed that advice saying, if a reporter calls, it can't be good news. If a reporter calls, I'm not going to talk to them. I'll say no comment. I won't return the call. Is it good advice for religious leaders to do that? Joining us to talk about whether religious leaders should risk talking to reporters, to the press, to the media, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion, and he joins us from Prague. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to talk to you.
What takes you to Prague?
You might remember that at about this time last year, I was in Prague, and a journalism education project that I'm a part of called the Media Project, which is the people behind Get Religion, and also some of the people behind the New York City journalism semester at the King's College in New York City. Well, we do other projects around the world, and one of them is the European Journalism Institute, and it is held for a week every summer in Prague. It got restarted last year, and I can't tell you how impressed I am with the young people that come to this program out of the former Soviet bloc countries. Ukraine, Bulgaria, Romania, you know, et cetera. It's really a delight to get to work with these students. They're so thankful for this opportunity. We're meeting this year at the medieval Charles University, which is the oldest university in what is now the, you know, the Czech Republic. We are, you know, like three blocks from Wenceslas Square and where the Czech revolt against the communists unfolded. And it's just astonishingly beautiful. And so I'm here delivering a set of three lectures about religion writing. One is the kind of a quick history of religion writing in the mid to late 20th century and into the 21st century. The second is the lecture that I think we've talked about before called The Seven Deadly Sins of Religion Writing. And the third is what we're talking about today, which is, are the four biases that most shape the coverage of religion. And I'm using bias here, not automatically in the sense of prejudice, but bias in the sense that if you're in a sailboat, the wind biases you to go in a particular direction, kind of like forces within journalism that influence the work that journalists do. And this, the subject of media bias, and specifically clergy sort of being biased against journalists, sort of, that came up this week at Get Religion in response to some writing by Bobby Ross Jr. And then I wrote a post kind of responding, you know, on the topic of media bias, and what we've been discussing is, should religion leaders risk talking to reporters? I didn't mention it in this particular post, but long ago, Dr. Leighton Ford, the evangelical leader who is, well, besides his own writing, he's also known as the brother-in-law of Billy Graham, is married to one of Graham's sisters. And Leighton Ford, after I had done some work with him, he said, you know, Terry, it would be great if you could be at a seminary if you did nothing other than teach ministers how to relate to the media. That alone would be worth having you at a seminary, because so many of our ministers live in terror of the press and thus miss a lot of opportunities to interact with their own communities and kind of the culture around them represented by the newspaper. So that's kind of the broad subject I ended up writing about this week. And I put up a large piece of an essay that I wrote something like 25 years ago exactly on this topic.
So let's kind of put it in terms of a parish pastor who's serving in a medium-sized city. He walks into his office one afternoon and the church secretary hands him a note saying that a reporter from the local, again, mid-sized city, in this case, my case, it might be the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, a reporter called and wants to talk to you about something. Why should he return that call?
Well, first of all, unless the minister is sitting there going, oh, how did a reporter hear about such and such, as in a terrible story at something going on at his own church. In other words, if a minister already knows that something horrible is going on, there's the question of whether you should return the call. That's a different situation than the reporter is just investigating some subject and for some reason has thought to call you. I would say at the very least, even a guilty as sin minister needs to call the reporter back and at least try to find out what the topic is. What is this reporter calling about? Now, if you are so guilty that you already know what they're calling about and you don't want to talk to them because you know that this is a dispute you feel you can't win, what does that say about the minister? The other problem, though, is if the reporter's calling you and you think it's a bad story, you already have to know that it is not in your ability to make the story go away, right? I mean, if the reporter is already calling you, asking you for your take on something, they have enough material to probably write some kind of a story. The issue is whether your viewpoint is going to be in it. Every reporter knows how to call up a source and say, look, I have already heard this, this, and this. These people are already on the record. Would you like to respond? Well, the option to not responding is that the story is already going to run. The issue is whether the only thing in that story representing your views are minister so-and-so refused to talk when contacted, or declined an interview. Now, did that help your case?
Not a bit.
No, not a bit, because you don't have the ability to stop that story. Now, all of this, I'm assuming it's bad. What if they're calling you about something that's good? What if they heard about some really intriguing program related to Lutheran education, and they actually think it's fascinating that your local school, the young people are reading at 25% above, you know, normal, and they want to ask you why? Well, at that point, it's all positive. But what if the Lutheran school is having a controversy involving, say, parents who think the school is now too strict on sexuality politics, and you suspect the paper wants to paint your school as some sort of conservative Neanderthal school that hates LGBT people or something? Now, that's a real question about how you handle that call. But let's put it this way. Who else is going to speak in defense of the school if ministers don't, or if the school leaders don't? That gets us into a question about strategy. And what I normally advise people facing at what they think could be a hostile story on a social issue, you got to think two things. One, I have a chance here to defend our church's teaching to the public. They're going to write this story without it. And if they write the story without me and several other people talking, the only voices in the story are going to be the advocates of the other doctrinal position, the critics. What I normally suggest ministers do is agree to the interview, but only if A, it's face-to-face, not on the telephone, and B, that you say, I'll tape the interview and you tape it as well, so that we both know exactly what I said. Now, some reporters consider that a hostile thing to do, at which point, if I was a minister, I'd say, well, okay, then I really don't want to do the interview. Why wouldn't you want me to tape my own words if you're going to record my words? What's wrong with me recording them? That often makes the reporter know that you're serious about this and that you're greatly concerned about whether you're quoted out of context or whether you're even quoted accurately. Does that make any sense?
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're answering the question, should religious leaders risk talking to reporters? He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. When we come back, religious leaders often assume hostility from the press. He says it does not rise to that level. We'll find out what he means after this. You can meet and hear Anthony Esselin, John Warwick Montgomery, Ryan Anderson, Bev Yonke, Mark Kaltoff, and Chris Roseborough at the 2018 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Early bird registration is $110. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas.
When pastors talk about us, they call us ad crucem. When laity mention us, they speak of ad crucem. When non-Lutherans address us, they say ADC Rucam. But no matter how you say it, ad crucem is the place to go for greeting cards, artwork, jewelry, ornaments, housewares, church certificates, church banners, and all your gift buying needs. Visit adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. ADCRUCEM.com.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armedforces.
Children are a heritage from the Lord, but what of those who've not been given the gift of a child? The cross of barrenness affects not only childless couples, it affects the family, friends, and pastors who love and care for them. I'm Katie Schuerman, and I'm partnering with Emmanuel Press to publish the second edition of my book, He Remembers the Barren, a story about the hope and contentment found only in Christ, no matter the cross we bear. Visit emmanuelpress.us to learn more. emmanuelpress.us.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
As you head to the beach this summer, why not skip the trashy paperbacks and stick a few copies of the Lutheran Witness in your tote instead? With insightful articles from some of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's most compelling voices, the Lutheran Witness magazine makes for great reading at the beach, on the front porch, or wherever. Subscribe today at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority, they've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest. Should religious leaders risk talking to reporters? We're answering that question. Terry, I'm wondering about these religious leaders, and I think this is probably safe to assume that most either pastors of big or small churches assume that the press is hostile to religion, but you say it doesn't even rise to the level of hostility. What do you mean?
Well, let's just go ahead and read to the listener. We got this very angry letter from someone, and it says, "It boggles this Catholic's mind that you are surprised that any of these pastors would talk to a reporter. This blog," meaning Get Religion, "has existed on the premise that the media, by and large, are hostile to any kind of religion." Well, that's a very serious misunderstanding of what Get Religion is about. I was pretty happy with how I responded. And above all, what I said is, to be blunt about it, most journalists don't care enough about religion to be hostile to it. Apathy does not equal hostility. Ignorance does not even equal hostility. And there are a lot of journalists who are just as scared to write stories about religion as ministers are to talk to journalists, because they're scared of making mistakes. And they view, frankly, they view religious people as extremely sensitive to criticism or extremely defensive about people writing about their beliefs. And so that reporter may not be perfectly happy calling you either. I mean, the shoe could be on the other foot. But this all comes down into the topic of whether or not the media is automatically biased against you. So let me quickly just run through a little bit of the material that's in this post that I hope our listeners will read at Get Religion. I always stress to people that, in my experience, there are at least four kinds of bias that affect the news. And one of it is simply the bias of space, time, and resources. You may be dealing with a publication that simply doesn't have enough money to have a religion reporter, or they don't have enough space in their paper or their TV show to do an adequate job of covering a religion story, and they may know that. But that's the kind of bias that shapes everything in journalism. You just don't have enough space, time, or money to get this job done. The second bias, the bias of ignorance, I like to sum it up by saying you can't cover a story if you don't know it exists. A lot of people know so little about religion that they don't even know what the story is when they hear about a topic. They may not even understand why. Let me give you a classic example. Nothing is more emotional to church people than changing their music. I mean, you can get into arguments about sexuality and a bunch of other stuff, but if you really want to blow a church up, change the hymnal. Or even talk about changing the hymnal. Or throw the hymnal out and suddenly put stuff up on a screen in front of them, you know, with a rock band. You're going to get people emotional at this point. I was covering an ELCA church, and this was the last church in town to accept the new Lutheran hymn book during the early 1980s. And this guy had all kinds of legitimate reasons for why he didn't like the new hymnal, and he made lots of intellectual arguments about it. But then as I left the church, he held up the old hymnal, and he said, "I married my wife with this book. We baptized our children with this book. I buried my wife with this book. They're not going to take it away from me." Now, is that a rather emotional subject? A reporter who doesn't understand religion, doesn't understand music or liturgy or whatever, at that point, that reporter may be just as frightened of talking about that subject as the man is. The reporter just is ignorant. They don't know why this matters so much. The third bias is the bias of worldview, which is that it's hard to cover a story if you don't care that it exists. And I happen to think this is the most powerful bias that shapes religion coverage, which is that a lot of people that work in newsrooms, notice I said a lot, not all, a lot of people who work in newsrooms, religious faith and the practice of religious faith just isn't a part of their lives, and it never has been, and they don't understand, once again, why this is so important. The liberal journalist and liberal Baptist thinker Bill Moyers has a great image that I think you and I have discussed before, which is where he said, many journalists are just tone deaf to the music of religion. They go to meetings that you might find very emotional and very interesting and even controversial, and the reporter walks out of there going, what the heck were they talking about? And not only do they not have the intellectual ability to know about it, they just emotionally don't feel anything. They don't know what was happening. And the fourth bias is the one that most ministers are worried about, which is some sort of bias of active prejudice against religion. Well, first of all, a lot of journalists love some forms of religion, and they don't like others. But you can't say that they're against all religion, because they're not. The New York Times loves all kinds of religion. It's just not sure if it can be fair covering traditional forms of religion, especially Protestant or Catholic or Orthodox Judaism or whatever. They struggle with the very traditional forms. So most ministers go straight to bias number four and assume negative prejudice. And that's what we've got to talk ministers out of, because that is, in my experience, the least common form of prejudice or bias involving religion coverage. What you probably need to do is talk to the reporter long enough to try to help them understand why this story matters. Assume that it's not a part of their worldview, or assume that they might not even know what these words mean. And you might need to have experts related to your denomination who specialize in talking to reporters and helping explain the difference between a Missouri Synod Lutheran or an ELCA Lutheran. Or they may have heard that, you know, Orthodoxy is just like Catholicism. Well, you might have to explain that to somebody. Intellectually, they may not know the facts. And then emotionally, they just may not think it matters. It just doesn't sound like something important to them. All in all, if you'll think back to the Issues Etc. conference last summer, I urged people to form, even at any size church, I urged them to have at least two or three people who served as a media liaison committee to the pastor, who just went out of their way to read the local media and to find out kind of what reporters seemed to understand what and what reporters had a blind spot on certain types of things. Any pastor needs to have some people who are paying very close attention to the local media and can help them understand what's the best strategy for returning this call. What's the best strategy for making a case for why our school believes what it believes? Those lay people may have some ideas the pastor needs to hear before he calls back.
We've spoken here about kind of a parish pastor, be it a large or small congregation. What if it's farther up the chain of command, so to speak? You mentioned denominations a moment ago. I think a lot of times the circle the wagons mentality that the pastor may experience as an individual when contacted by a reporter to comment on some story is exacerbated when there are people who are actually paid to communicate with the press on a regular basis.
Well, and the irony there is my experience is that the people who do that job best are usually people that actually know the media because they've worked in it. And the people who do that job the worst are people who only know the cautious, prevent damage, spin our story approach of public relations. Now, I'm not saying that a denomination does not need a public relations office. But boy, it would be great if they had at least one or two people in that office who have actually worked in the press and knows how reporters think, knows what stories are. Let's put it this way. If you had someone who came straight out of a Lutheran school, all they've done is advertising and PR, and it's time for them to return the call, who would you rather have return that call? That PR person or Molly or Mark Hemingway? Isn't the answer to that question rather obvious? Well, why is it obvious? because they understand the press. For many years now, Baptist Press, the actual news agency of the Southern Baptist Convention, I don't think they've been without a two or three members of their staff for maybe 50 years, 50. As far as my knowledge, at every single point the last half century, somebody in the Baptist Press office has had significant experience at the Associated Press or at least mid-sized mainstream newspapers in areas that cover Southern Baptist life a lot. Those folks are going to be, 9 times out of 10, are going to be better sources of advice on how to work with the press than someone whose only perspective is marketing and PR. And I think other denominations should be seeking out the same people. I know most Catholic institutions have somebody that's worked in the press. In one really interesting case in the Pittsburgh area, the woman who is the press liaison, and she's also very active in the education office of the Roman Catholic Diocese, might even be Archdiocese of Pittsburgh. It's ironic. The woman is actually an Episcopalian. She's an Anglican, but they hired her anyway because she was, at the time she took this job, was one of, in my opinion, one of the top 5 or 6 religion reporters in America. And she had just reached a stage where she wanted to do something different. And as one person in that area said to me, she knows a lot more about the Catholic Church in our area than almost any of the Catholics I know. So the spokeswoman for this Catholic archdiocese, the person who handles the press, is actually an Anglican, a conservative Anglican, if I remember correctly, who has like 25 years experience as a religion reporter. Don't you think she probably does a pretty good job of working with the press? Again, I'm asking a question that the answer is rather obvious. Well, our churches need these kinds of people to be involved. The media isn't going to go away. And at some point, either on positive stories or negative stories, it's in your interest to let your voice defend what your church believes. It's especially good if you can do it in short sound bites and you're funny as well as accurate. There are some people that are better at dealing with the press than others. And if local pastors and powerful local pastors don't know who their people are that can do that, then once again, they're not getting the job done.
We're talking with Terry Mattingly about how religious leaders interact with the press when we come back. The case of D.C. Cardinal Theodore McCarrick. How would Terry evaluate the Roman Catholic hierarchy's interaction with the press there?
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Lutherans for Life is the Lutheran Federal Credit Union Ministry of the Month. During July, if you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or if you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to Lutherans for Life. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Good for you. Good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. returned to the air on June 30th after being canceled by the previous leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod during Holy Week of 2008. For a special 10-year anniversary donation of $100 or more, we'll send you a CD of Issues Etc. listeners' top 12 hymns. You can make an anniversary gift online at issuesetc.org or by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. We're talking about how religious leaders interact with the press. Terry Mattingly is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc. Terry is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Expert guests, expansive topics, extolling Christ. It's all there at the Fall 2018 Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas, Texas. You can meet and hear Anthony Esalen, John Warwick Montgomery, Ryan Anderson, Chris Rosebro, Beverly Yonke, and Mark Kaltoff speaking on topics like Western civilization, a legal case for the resurrection of Christ, the First Amendment, infant baptism, transgenderism, and revisionist history. Attendance at the conference is limited to 400. Child care is free. You can find out more at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. It's the Fall Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Terry, let's do a little post-game evaluation of the biggest story coming, well, related to church leaders and the press of late, and that is the story of D.C. Cardinal Theodore McCarrick, who, according to allegations that have been made for years that reporters have known about, been unable to verify with named sources, was engaged in dalliances with seminarians and somehow still became cardinal. How would you evaluate how the Roman Catholic hierarchy have handled its interaction with the press?
No, I think they've covered themselves in shame for the most part. When it's become apparent that they have managed to bury this story forever. To me, one of the most disturbing factors was that I've read several places that almost a decade ago or more, the New York Times had a story written about this case and buried the story or spiked it, didn't run it at all. And I almost want someone now to do a journalism report about why that journalism report got spiked. But when you're dealing with, like, the Cardinal Archbishop of Washington and someone who was, it's safe to say, extremely popular with, let's be honest, probably more with Democrats in Washington than Republicans, based on my own experience living in Washington during part of the years when he was there, this man was incredibly popular with the press. But I know there were reporters who tried to break this story. And the only reason they didn't is that people felt that if they went on the record, this man could hurt them too much. And as a result, we ended up with an ongoing tragedy that is bringing far greater shame to the church now than it ever could have in the past, in my personal opinion. But to some degree, this doesn't fit with the topic we're discussing. If you were a Roman Catholic priest in Washington and someone called you up, a reporter called you up and said, will you go on the record about the following accusations against your cardinal? Under the actual laws of the Catholic Church, I don't know if that pastor can comment on the record. It's not just a matter of courage. I mean, he's implicating his direct superior in a hierarchy in which he's under oath to be quite literally, in some ways, subservient and obedient. He's taken oaths of obedience to his bishop. Now, as a reporter, I wish that ministers under those circumstances could be more honest. And I've covered stories where I talked to ministers who had things to tell me, and they said, look, I can't say this on the record about my archbishop or my bishop or my cardinal rector of the school or whatever. And here's what I've normally done as a reporter. I've said, I understand that as a Roman Catholic, because of your vows, you can't tell me this on the record. But would you help me meet with four or five other priests who could verify this information? And I'll now negotiate with my editor for some form of anonymous identification that will still let the readers know that we didn't make this up. And you end up with a wording like, according to five priests with at least 20 years of experience in the Archdiocese. Now, I'd sure wish I could quote them by name, but I know I can't. So to get the story done, sometimes you have to quote people. But I don't like purely anonymous sources. I don't like said an anonymous source who works for the diocese. I don't think that tells the reader enough. That could be a building supervisor for all you know. I think reporters owe us more information than that. But once again, I think we've gone a long, long way from the original subject, which is kind of the ordinary pastor of a healthy church, and you've got a note, and you don't have any idea why that reporter wants to talk to you. By all means, call them back. And if they bring up some subject that all of a sudden you're worried about, say, look, I want to do some reading about this. I'll call you back in 2 days, and I'll tell you my decision at that time. Don't rush yourself. Don't say anything you would have second thoughts about it. You might ask the reporter what their deadline is. That would let you know how much time they're going to work on the story, how seriously they're taking it. But we've been so negative. I want to end, if I can, with a positive point. In a lot of cases, you also have a positive opportunity to let your public know that your church is doing a certain type of work. Or you may straighten out some misconception about your church. A Missouri Synod pastor might have a chance to stress, maybe all the reporters heard is that, you know, Missouri Synod doesn't ordain women. But you might have an opportunity to say, well, you know, the real experts on that subject, there are 3 women in my congregation who have worked on that subject for years. Can I put you in touch with them? They know more about childhood development than I'll ever know. Would you like to talk to them? You see what I'm getting at? It's an opportunity that's a positive opportunity as well as potentially a negative. And in my experience as a reporter, it's positive way more often than it is negative. Because frankly, what's going on in the lives of our churches is way more positive over the life of your church than anything that would be considered negative.
One more question for you, Terry. Part of this, of our conversation, is acknowledging the fact, as you said earlier, that it's perhaps a lack of interest or a lack of knowledge, just sheer ignorance on the part of a reporter, that makes that phone call an awkward situation on both ends of the line when the reporter calls the pastor or something like that. In your opinion, after having spent a career doing this, what do you think makes for a good religion beat reporter? They obviously can't be an expert in all matters religious, but what do they absolutely have to have in order to fairly cover religion, either small scale or large scale?
Well, that's a great way of wording the question. One of the things I like to try to find out, or I tell pastors to find out, is try to find out what the reporter doesn't know. When you're dealing with a reporter who's really good, they will already know what they don't know. They may be calling you asking for help, for additional information. I'll end with just one anecdote. Soon after I left the Rocky Mountain News in Denver, the Rocky Mountain News ran a story about prayer. Now, everybody wants a religion story near Easter, and they no longer had a religion reporter full-time in the newsroom. And it was like the editor just pointed at some poor godforsaken Metro reporter and said, hey, we need a story on prayer. Go out and interview some people and come back with a story. And the poor reporter walked out the front door, saw 3 churches with steeples, went and talked to 3 mainline Protestant and Catholic ministers about prayer, came back and wrote a story. Well, in doing so, they looked really dumb, because the state of Colorado includes at least 5 internationally known centers for the practice and study of prayer. The Roman Catholic monks at Snowmass are known all over the world. There's a charismatic Episcopal retreat center where people come for conferences on prayer at all times. In Colorado Springs, you have the Navigators, one of the most spiritual discipline-oriented parts of the evangelical Protestant world there is. Then you had another whole monastic order of women there in Denver. And then in Boulder, just to be different, you have an entire center for Buddhist prayer and learning about prayer. Now, what does that have to do with the local ministers? Well, let's say that one of those churches that the guy walks in and said, I have to do a story on prayer. Can you tell me about prayer? Wouldn't it help if you said, do you know about the monks at Snowmass? Or, you know, the folks up at the Evergreen Conference Center are really sharp on this. I'll be glad to talk to you, but let me get you the phone numbers of it, of the navigators. There's this world-famous ministry of prayer just right down the highway. You could jump in a car and go talk to the navigators, and you'd be dealing with people that are known all over America for this topic. In other words, turn it into a positive chance to give the reporter information that will actually help result in a better story. And when you do that, reporters will learn to trust you, and they'll come back in the future seeking additional information. That is, if they're good enough reporters to really care. And, you know, maybe they will be. It's worth a shot.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the Weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He is founder and editor of Get Religion. He joined us from Prague. Terry, have a safe trip home, and we'll talk again next week.
Talk to you next week indeed.
It's Old Testament Day tomorrow on Issues Etc. We'll discuss the prophet Elijah with Dr. Walter A. Meyer III of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And we'll talk with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer about the prophets taking us before the divine tribunal, the judgment seat of God. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.